Rebag, your premier destination for luxury resale. Elevate your style with our curated collection of bags, watches, and fine jewelry. At Rebag, quality is our priority. Each piece meticulously vetted and verified by experts, ensuring your investment is nothing short of perfection. Buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Hermes, Chanel, and Cartier. Access expertly crafted and hard-to-find pieces that redefine luxury. Your next investment awaits at Rebag. Get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10. That's 10% off the luxury you deserve. Don't miss out. Head to Rebag.com and enter code REBAG10 at checkout. That's REBAG10.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello and welcome to All Stats That Week, a podcast in which Leeds fans cast their combined eye over goings-on at Elland Road, giving scrutiny to the underlying statistics and tactical footings at work at Leeds United. I'm Martin Riley, the big chance being missed 4 minutes into the game of the podcast. Oh, it's going to be one of those days, is it? And I'm joined by the first half red card of the podcast, Dan Holdsworth. How very EFL of you, Jonathan Hogg. And finally, I'm joined by the Archie Gray being subbed off of the podcast. Let's hope that our generational talent doesn't need subbing off. It's Will Clay. Will, how are you doing?
I'm doing good. As much as you can do good on a weekend where your football team has frustrated you.
That's fair.
Yeah, I kept myself busy otherwise and then on to doing this. And then I can pretend the game never happened, hopefully.
That's the best way to handle it. And have you eaten well today?
I did. I've just had like a chicken and chorizo with various vegetables and some rice. That was very tasty.
Good stuff, good stuff. I, myself, have had a roast pork dinner, which was...
Ooh.
Yeah, it was very good. With all the trimmings, had some broccoli on there and some sweet corn, Yorkshire puddings, yeah, a bit of applesauce on the pork as well. It was very good. And how about you, Dan? How are you doing?
I'm going to jump in on the food question first, because I've just had... I've had a Greek kebab. Is it a gyros or a gyro? I don't know how you say it. But anyway, one of those. It was homemade, made me in flatbreads, made me in tzatziki. It was really, really good, if I do say so. And I had roast lamb yesterday at my mum and dad's house. So I'm proper well fed the last 2 days, which makes up for the like crappy Leeds performance. So otherwise, I'm great, Martin. Cheers.
Well, it's good that you're well fed at least.
Is it a gyro or is it a gyros? What is it? Does anybody know?
I would say gyros.
Oh, I've got... Yeah, no definitive answer, unfortunately, so I can't help.
I could look it up, but, you know, it's not that important, really. Anyway.
So welcome to All Stats That Week, where we debate the pronunciation of Greek food. No, we were not here to talk about... Or kebabs, yes. We're not here to talk about that. We're here to talk about our draw, I've almost said loss, against Huddersfield Town. So, yeah, that's why we are here today. So I'll track straight into the game summary. Leeds started the game their usual 4-2-3-1, with Huddersfield changing their usual shape and started the game in a 4-4-2. Leeds dominated possession throughout the first half and having the better of the chances from open play, with Huddersfield largely threatening in transition, winning lots of set pieces. Leeds, however, weren't able to make their possessional dominance pay off, and Huddersfield were the team to draw first blood, with Mikhail Helic scoring from close range after Melier saved a Danny Ward header. The first half was closed off, with Jonathan Hogg being sent off for a second yellow card in the fourth of 9 minutes of injury time. Into the second half, Leeds continued their dominance, with Huddersfield having even less of the possession. Leeds had a whopping 81% of the possession in the second half. Leeds did make their possession pay off, however, in the 6th-7th minutes, with Bamford tapping in a Conor Roberts cross from close range, making the score 1-1. Leeds continued to apply pressure for the rest of the game, but weren't able to find the winning goal, and the game ended 1-1. A lot shorter than the previous game summary of the Leicester game. But yes, we'll get into the interrogation. So let's get straight into this. We've ended the game with 78% possession overall, which is the highest possession we've achieved while Opta has been collecting records. So why weren't we able to turn this possession into a winning performance? I'll come to Dan first.
you often see this, don't you, in games where there's one team that has a ridiculous amount of possession versus a team that doesn't, that it ends up being a stalemate. So I think there's something counterproductive. There's probably like a tipping point, isn't there, when you can have too much possession. And I wonder if there's a bit of that here. You know, like if we had 60% of the ball, that would probably indicate that Huddersfield, you know, did step out and did have some attacks and left some space. But when you've got 78% of the ball, it's just attack v defence, generally against a compact, packed-in defence, you know, playing very deep and just closing the space off. And that's just horrible to play against, isn't it? So it's kind of one of those old cliches, isn't it? Like, you know, playing against 10 men's tough, playing against a very deep, compact team is very tough, isn't it? Particularly for this Leeds team, I don't think it's particularly our forte or this team's forte, breaking down those very low, compact, packed blocks. So it's just a function of that, really, I think.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. It can make things very difficult for you, especially when you don't have that player who can pick the right pass. Obviously, we know that Ruteri is our most creative player, but he's not sort of like a Pablo who can pick a low block with a line-splitting pass like that, like Blow could many times and did many times over. How about you, Will? What did you make of this?
Yeah, I think Dan's right about too much possession doesn't suit this Leeds team. If Huddersfield had done a bit more, there would have been more transitions, and I don't doubt we would have scored there. I do think in general, even with the possession we had, there was times where it's just not quite Yap Stam Reading, but it seemed like we were going through the motions a bit with our pass it to Gruev, he'll pass it to a centre-back, he'll get it back, rather than having any real zip or intent straight from the off. And I know we've spoke before about that's probably a deliberate instruction that Leeds want to get the ball back, settle in possession and then attack. But yeah, Saturday left me frustrated that maybe there's one or two bits where you could have thought, you know, let's get at them now. And it might not be as secure possession, but you've got a better chance of forcing something, was my view of it.
It's interesting because I started to take a look at the first and second half XG stats. Obviously, we're generally a team who does better in transition, as we all know. However, in the first half, where there probably was a little more transitional play going on and with more space to play in, we only had 0.46 XG in the first half. And quite a big chunk of that came from the missed big chance from Somerville 4 minutes into the game, which we alluded to in the intro. And then in the second half, we actually had 1.46 XG, so three times as much XG. And that was during the time period where Huddersfield were sitting back very, very heavily. And that was after their red card, so they'd put up shop completely. So we were able to create XG during the second half where it was at its most difficult for us. So maybe it's just one of those games where we say mea culpa. And it's just sort of thing that happens in football. Do you think that would be fair?
I think there's some of that, but it's worth pointing out that there's only one, you know, as per XG, one big chance in that second half, and that was the goal, the Bamford chance. I mean, there's a couple that kind of point to, so big-ish chances or approaching big chances. There's the Bamford one on 85 minutes, and there's a Griff shot on 92 minutes that comes out 0.24. I really can't remember it, to be honest. Now I think about it. But the Somerville chance that kind of sailed past the post on 86 minutes was only 0.14, and that felt like a big chance, really. You know, it felt like Somerville should have got his foot around that a bit more and probably put that away for the win. So, yeah, I think it's more volume, wasn't it, Martin, than real big open chances, with the exception of the one big one, which was the goal.
That's totally fair. So moving on to the next one, we had a question from Phil LUFC on Twitter. The question was, the obvious one would be the differences in town setup after A, Hogg injured his own player and B, got sent off. I feel both were actually positive for them and we had a lot less room to play in when they went to three centre-backs and then when they stopped having any real attacking ambition. So what changed after their red cards and was this the reason for them stopping attacking or was this more down to game state? I'll come to you first, Will.
I'd lean towards game state, I think. But then it is difficult to tell because we didn't get enough play between, you know, they scored and then straight away got a man sent off. There wasn't really a sample to look at of possession where we were trying to break them down and they hadn't gone to 10 men. But I sort of would lean towards thinking, you know, they stepped up a decent amount and then scored and then the plan would always have been to sit off a bit more, take less risks and solidify. So game state would be what I'd lean towards, but, you know, we can't prove that.
Yeah, exactly. It's one of those things where some people live by game state and say it's a very, very important thing. And I do agree that it is quite important and probably is one of the overriding factors in this. And it's also some of the stats about Huddersfield's approach, like out of possession, like in the first half, they committed 8 fouls and obviously got someone sent off. Then in the second half, they only had 2 fouls. And so that maybe indicates a bit that they weren't stepping onto us as much and not being as aggressive. So where do you come on this one, Dan?
Yeah, it's funny. I've got a note here about exactly that, really. I think Huddersfield were quite kind of man-to-man. I mean, not pure kind of Bielsa man-to-man, following people everywhere, but they were quite kind of aggressive and going at us, weren't they, first half? Or certainly in moments, you'd see a fullback tracking a winger quite central, things like that. And I think there was probably some... Obviously, that was a plan of theirs to really get into our faces and get physical and break the game up first half. And I think the red card just changed that completely, and it became kind of very much the zone low block, didn't it? You know, it kind of switched. So it was almost the second half, they became very passive, and they were almost like diving for fouls, weren't they, and breaking play up that way in a different way. They were kind of, you know, waiting for the contact of a Leeds player and then follow flopping over. So it was almost like two different teams in their kind of defensive or game management approach, I think. I mean, neither suited Leeds, really. It didn't work for Leeds either, really. So it's kind of, I think, in a funny way, had the game carried on like the first half, I would have fancied Leeds to get on top eventually with our, you know, like the kind of firepower we have off the bench. You could have seen them tiring and, you know, maybe having a bit of joy in the last sort of 15, 20 minutes or so of the game. But because the game state changed and then the game model changed, we were then just playing attack v defence. I just think it, the whole game was very much sort of broken up for Leeds, wasn't it? We're playing two sort of different defensive setups. The whole game plan was, the whole game was around being broken up and Leeds having no kind of real rhythm to play with. And I just think, you know, it was kind of frustrating for both of those reasons. Sorry, it was frustrating for two different reasons, but with a similar outcome, I felt.
That's all very fair. And this, I tweeted during half time, Huddersfield were trying to out EFL Preston, and it wouldn't have surprised me at that point if they had gone on to have more fouls in that Preston game, which, just in case you're wondering, was 22 fouls they finished that lad's game with. So to have such a contrast in the way they approach out of possession in the second half, to only have 2 fouls to the 10-8 in the first half, it's a pretty drastic change. So yeah, it definitely was more effective for them, and I agree with what question said that it was a positive change for them to drop that bit deeper and to be less space for us to play into. But yeah, it's interesting questions though. And next we had a question from Ollie, aren't we, on Twitter. They asked, is there any clear tactical tweaks in games like yesterday when Daniel Farke throws on lots of attackers late on to try and grab a goal? And also, is having that many similar attackers on at once always the best approach, or does it just congest any possible space even further? And I'll come to Dan first.
So when he made that change, didn't he, Farke, yesterday around, was it 60 minutes perhaps, when Roberts and Dan James and Perreault came on? And I don't think there wasn't a tactical change there, was it? It was just a profile change. You know, it was like player for player, wasn't it? And just changing the profile. So Nonto came off and Dan James came on, and instantly Dan James is hugging the touchline and playing wide, sort of high and wide and stretching the game. And he got supported by Roberts down that flank instead of Archie Gray, who would maybe come in and combine a bit more. But I don't think there wasn't like a change in the way we build up. There wasn't a change in the way that the sort of runs our forwards were making. It didn't feel like a tactical change. It just felt like a profile, and how that profile adapts, you know, how that profile interprets the system is different, but it's not really tactical, is it? So I don't think Farke ever makes tactical changes, really. I think Farke is about managing different profiles for different outcomes. That's what he does. That's what his thing is. And to be fair, I thought our best spell probably came when that impetus came from particularly Roberts and Dan James on the right hand side. We had a real nice spell, didn't we, for sort of 60, 70 minutes, got the goal. Had another couple of fairly good moments where we could have just, you know, maybe got a goal or set something up. But yeah, it's just profile, not tactical, I would say.
Yeah, I would agree with that. It's not something that Farke has ever done with us so far, is make big sweeping tactical changes in the middle of a game. It's just usually either like for like players or they come on and then the profile, like you said, switches slightly. How about you, Will? How do you come on this?
The second bit of the question about does having similar attackers make us worse? I think yes, definitely. It's something I used to slate Steve Bruce's Newcastle for. They'd be losing and he'd bring on Andy Carroll and Dwight Gayle and they'd have 5 strikers on the pitch and do nothing because they still weren't creating. And Farke isn't as bad as that. But I do think Pirro and Bamford sometimes, it's not that they're kind of doing the same thing, or it was really obvious just for the last few minutes. Anthony and Somerville were both looking to be on the left, sort of on the edge of the penalty area and cutting in and shooting. But then you've got two players doing one job and you lose having the threat that Firpo was. You know, he's not as talented as Somerville or Anthony, but having somebody to overlap on the left just to give the defender something to think about and to keep the pitch big in the way that we saw success from Roberts and James's side, that was frustrating. That it's bring on, you know, another winger or another striker who wants to do what a player is already doing, when against a low block, you should be making the pitch as big as possible. And that doesn't guarantee you'll win because low blocks are horrible. But I don't think the subs gave us the best chance necessarily of scoring the second goal.
I would agree with all that. And especially the thing about Jadon Anthony is usually he does offer us something different when he's on that left side. Like most of the time when he comes on, he's trying to put a lot of crosses into the box, and he's pretty good at them. He's good at getting balls into the box, into dangerous areas. But in this game, he only attempted one cross, just one. And on the other side, Dan James attempted 10. Which is just a pretty mad differential, really. So I wonder if Daniel Farke had said that he doesn't want him attempting as many crosses as he normally does, and to leave that to James on the other side, which would be a strange instruction. It could just be that maybe he didn't find the time to make those crosses, but are you going to say something there, Dan?
Yeah, I just think it was a function of him being kind of paired with Somerville out there, and Somerville's just kind of more dominant player, isn't he? He's the big man on campus, you know, at the moment, isn't he? So he's going to just dominate the ball, and Anthony's just going to be playing second fiddle to him. It would have been interesting, and the sub I would have preferred would be Anthony for Somerville and kept Firpo on, and just change the dynamic and profile that way, and you still maintain that kind of outside left attacking threat from Firpo, who I thought was okay, really. I thought he got around the outside and, you know, attempted some dangerous balls occasionally. We should have carried on with that. And perhaps swap Somerville for Anthony, if that's what you're thinking you're going to do. I get not taking Somerville off because he's brilliant, but you know you've got to have some kind of discipline with these things, haven't you? And not just think, oh, I'll chuck all my the Steve Bruce approach is we've just heard about chucking all my attackers on there, because sometimes they get in each other's way, don't they? And diminish each other and get in each other's way. So yeah, it didn't work. I didn't like it at all. It's a shame because I think Anthony's a good player. We saw against Chelsea midweek, he can be a good player, can be effective. It's kind of a shame to kind of bring him on in that kind of situation where he's kind of not really able to do what he's good at.
Yeah, I would agree with that. He's definitely a good player, and he didn't show what we know that he's capable of in this game, and he just really didn't get involved much. And I think what you said about Somerville taking over that flank is quite true. I mean, he only attempted eight passes in the short time that he was on, whereas Dan James on the other side had 28. So there was quite a big differential there about the way that there was both being used on both sides of the flanks. But while we've been talking on this left side of the pitch, we had some questions about our overuse of the left side of the pitch late in the game after James and Roberts were subbed on. So why do you think that we didn't make more use of the right side? And especially, I think it was after we scored. I don't think we barely used that side at all, especially considering the goal came from a lovely combination between James and Roberts. I'll come to Will first on this one.
The truth is, I don't know, because I don't think it was correct to ignore the right in the way that we did. And the only thing I could sort of think of was in the promotion team, a few of the players had said when they needed a goal, they always looked to Pablo. And, you know, as Dan's just said, Somerville is kind of the guy at the moment. So I didn't wonder if there was a bit of that. But he isn't, as was said earlier, we don't have a Pablo. Somerville isn't somebody that I think you'd want. He's very good, but I wouldn't want to give him high volume ball in the way that Pablo got. And if you are going to do that in this team, you give it to Ruta. So I can't see why. Well, I can see why they did it, because I think Somerville scored. Hopefully he'll do it again, maybe. That's thinking, but I don't think that should happen again, and I really hope it doesn't.
I mean, if you want a playmaker winger in our squad, it's Nonto, isn't it? He's more of a playmaker than Somerville.
Yeah.
I'd rather Somerville be high up and getting on the end of things and, you know, the last action or the penultimate action before the goal, not the guy sort of dropping in as a kind of almost like an eight and trying to make things happen. I mean, that's Nonto's game. So if we want a playmaker, then play Nonto there, not Somerville. That's Anyway, that's my rant.
No, that's very fair. And Nonto is probably the one whose profile speaks more to a creator than a goal threat. And it's the total reverse this season for Somerville, because he's been the guy who's been our most threatening player going forward. And he is a player who you would want to be making runs off the shoulder. And that could have been what, if he had been making those runs and Anthony was the one getting more of the ball, then possibly we could have seen more from that. But he wasn't really going for it. The ones who were making the runs was mainly Bamford and Perot and Routier. And yeah, it is odd that we didn't make more use of the right side, because James did was our most effective player, even though he only came on when he did. He had the most shot creating actions in the side with 6. So yeah, it's definitely one of those things where we could have made use more of that side than the other. And I can't really say why, other than, like you said, just hoping that someone will come create something. But I think that's about everything. Sorry.
There's just one small observation. Like, Perot came on and got involved in midfield a bit, because his naturally left foot, I think he was picking the ball up and turning, picking the ball up on the right hand side and turning onto his left foot and playing it out wide. And I think Bamford did that a few times. So it's perhaps just as simple as we had a couple of left foot guys picking the ball up in the half space and picking it left, you know, turning, and maybe just you know, happened enough times that it became a thing. I don't know. Maybe that's a factor. But yeah, it was weird. There was no obvious reason for it. And it, you know, other than that.
I totally agree with that. So that's about everything for the tactical analysis. So before we move on to the more player-based analysis, we will have a quick chat about our Patreon. And I have a bit of an ad break as well. So, but after this, otherwise Tom Alton will do something bad to me. But don't worry, patrons, you don't have to listen to this part. Our patrons get access to our Patreon for as little as $1.99 per month, which gives you ad-free podcasts. And if you want to pay a little bit more, you get other benefits, including early access to our preview pods, analysis articles, videos, and bonus podcasts. If you want to find out more about our Patreon, please visit Will.
Patreon.com/ASAW Patreon.
Perfect.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Now let's get back to the analysis with a bit less tactics chat and a bit more on players. So we'll start things off with having a bit of a chat about Ilan Meslier, who has come under criticism at points throughout the season. But what did you make to his performance in this match, Dan?
I thought he did fine. I mean, I was kind of thinking about the goal, the Huddersfield goal, and could he have perhaps pushed the ball out to one side for the goal? Maybe, if I'm being super critical. But although it was really hard to tell, but I think he perhaps kicked the ball out of his hand. I don't know if you agree with that, you guys, but I'm broadly speaking fairly happy with his performances lately. Some question about the first goal against Chelsea, but broadly speaking, I've got no complaints. Like I say, he got down to that shot, didn't he, and kept it out. Perhaps he could have shunted it to the side away from the away from Helic, but I think I've been super critical there, so I'm not overly concerned with Meslier right now.
Yeah, I'm in agreement with that. I felt that he had a pretty strong game in this. He had like an 80% save success rate, and he faced 1.4 plus actually. I think a few of the chances were improved from the position which they were in, so he faced a fair bit of XG in this game. And he did a good job to keep it to one goal conceded. I see your point about the goal, and maybe in a perfect world he could have pushed it out a little bit further. But I think, yeah, like you mentioned, that it may be a little bit too critical. But yeah, that's all I'll say. How about you, Will? What do you think of this?
Yeah, there's games this season where I do think criticism of Meslier is justified, and I don't think this is one of them. For the goal, you know, sometimes he just concedes and it's not really anyone's fault. It just happens because, you know, a downwards header that lands at his feet is massively awkward. And I think it's then just the lottery of who gets to the rebounds, and unfortunately it wasn't us. And yeah, he did well this game. He's not the reason we lost. I don't think criticism for this game is valid, essentially.
Totally agree with that, and I'm glad you mentioned about it, the header going down low, because he's a tall goalkeeper, and it's quite difficult for him to get down quickly to those low headers, and I think he did a good job just keeping that header out. We had a question from one of our Discord members, Glenn. He said, do you have any concerns with Somerville? Fitness / impact on games. In game week 10 to 27, he had 17 goal involvements, and he's had 4 in 8 since. Would you prefer to give Anthony and Nonto minutes on the left with Somerville used later in the next one or two games? I'll come to Dan first.
I'm not too happy with him at the moment, but it's more about the thing I mentioned before about him not being a playmaker. I think we want him higher on the ball and running at players in higher at the pitch in the final third rather than getting involved in build up play too much. So I think it's probably more of a tactical issue, his recent performance level rather than a fitness one. Now, I'm not discounting fitness either, because I know Parker's mentioned he's had a few knocks, hasn't he, and he's had to miss training a few times and stuff, so there's probably a bit of both, but I'd like to get the tactical role right, and I'd really like to see a way of getting him higher up the pitch and less involved as a midfielder, as it were. That'd be my focus. If it's true that he does have an injury, I wouldn't be totally against giving Nonto a run on the left at some point, if we can do that. We could do that against Stoke, perhaps, if it's the sort of game where we could make a couple of changes, but that's not Fark style, is it? So I don't expect it.
Oh, I'd agree. I definitely do think there is something in the fitness side of things, because, like you said, Fark has mentioned that he has been playing with knock and possibly some minor injuries below the surface. So we know how damaging that can be against players, and it can make them not perform at their best. So it wouldn't surprise me if that is a big factor in why he's not performing as good as what he can be. How about you, Will? Where do you come on this?
Happy to give him a rest against Stoke or somebody, if that was to fix and give him, a bit more recovery time, because I don't have any stats to back this up, but him and Ruta must be by far and away our most fouled players. So just the cumulative effect of getting kicked around the pitch for 30 games now would build up. But then I do also agree with Dan that I think he hasn't been playing massively worse. We're just slightly misusing him in that he isn't, without sounding too tactico-y, you'd want him in the final phase rather than in the sort of second phase of build-up. On the end of things, getting the assist or the goal, which is, he's got so many of them, he's brilliant at, let somebody else feed him the ball rather than let him try and do that for other people.
Oh, that's totally valid.
Yeah, the other thing to think about is we've got a game Tuesday and then again Friday, so there's a good argument for getting the most out of James and Nonto and Somerville. So there's a really good argument for rotating all three, isn't there, through both games, just to kind of get the most out of them.
Totally agree. And just on the foul thing, which Will mentioned there, I looked at the stats, and obviously Ruter is our most fouled player. He's been fouled 84 times. And following him is Somerville with 51 times where he's been fouled. But then not that far behind him, considering the differential in minutes, is Nonto with 36 where he's been fouled. So look at it per 90, still Ruter, who's our most fouled player, who's played regularly. And then you've got Nonto just behind him. So yeah, it's definitely those two players who have been picking up a lot of impacts throughout the season. So that's going to have an impact on you, and I think maybe Ruter's frame is a bit better at being able to cope with that, and I'm not sure if Somerville's is as much, but yeah, it's not something that would be good if you took a bit of that burden off him and gave him a bit of a break here and there. It wouldn't hurt at all, especially with so many games in like a very short period of time this week. It would be good to maybe give some more minutes to Anthony or try Nonto on the left. Yeah, I'd agree with that. So next, we've seen Georgie come under some criticism for him taking too many touches and losing possession in recent games and attempting too many take-ons. I will add, not from me, I might add. but how do you feel Georgie did in this game? I'll come to Will first.
I thought he was fine. There was particularly, in the first half, there was a few times that he just completely turned a midfield round in the way that he does. And maybe at the end, he went missing slightly, but that was because the ball was being fed on the left, where he largely wasn't. So I don't think it's fair to criticise him for that. He did lose the ball a few times, but so did everyone. And really, I'd rather give Ruta the ball and go, please do something, than some of there are other players. So I think when you're as creative as he is and has proven throughout the season to pull something out of nothing so often, you should be given a bit of license when things are looking a bit desperate to, it might go wrong, but you know, that's kind of the burden you carry being as talented as he is.
Indeed, I would agree with that. How about you, Dan?
Yeah, so like it's one of those live watch versus watch back things, this one. Like for the live watch, I was a bit like, yeah, Rutter didn't play all that great. But on the watch back, I thought it was fine, completely fine. Pretty tidy, like you say, taking players on, setting attacks up by kind of rolling midfield players, that kind of thing. I mean, the other thing is like his ball striking wasn't very good. We had the Steve Morrison shot, didn't we, in the second half? but I thought it's got to be forever known as a Steve Morrison shot, hasn't it? When it goes out, like not for a corner and not for a goal kick. But otherwise, I thought he was fine, and I thought he carried the game to them quite well. And he just got crowded out a bit towards the end, didn't he? When the game got a bit chaotic, and you know we had all the attackers on, and I guess he just didn't have any space to kind of operate really. And so no, Rutter was fine. No concerns with his performance.
Yeah, as it should be no surprise to both of you that I agree that he did have a perfectly fine game. He wasn't maybe as effective in some games in the final third, especially. He didn't really create a lot of chances in this game. But yeah, he was very effective at getting us past players, and he was a lot more reserved in the way he was making his take-ons. I don't have it to hand because PRF isn't working at the moment. But I believe in the Leicester game, he attempted more than 10 take-ons and was maybe successful with 4 or 5 of them. So that's around about a 50% success rate. Whereas in this game, he attempted 6 and won 5 of those. So much higher success rate in this when he was beginning for moments when to attempt to take on in this one. So that was interesting. And I wonder if that will continue if he's starting to start to pick and choose a bit more. So if not, always trying to beat a man and just pass it around a bit more. Instead of just doing that all the time. But yeah, he had a fine game.
Yeah, I wouldn't be shocked if he's been told, actually, because I think he was quite wasteful in the Plymouth game, the Plymouth League game that we won, the last game. And against Leicester, again, he was quite wasteful, even though he was very impactful at the end of the game, you know, magnificently so. So yeah, I wouldn't be totally shocked if he's been told just to be careful and, you know, keep it a bit tighter. And I guess it's like a risk-reward thing, isn't it? If he's been more conservative, he's gonna have fewer big moments, but we're going to retain the ball more. Perhaps. So, yeah, probably just a bit of that. I won't be shocked anyway if that's the case.
Yeah, exactly. And I also think late on in this game, I think he was mainly sticking around the final third and trying to make runs beyond when we brought on a bunch of attackers. I think that was mainly he was told to stay on the last line and let the other players do the progression and him just stay and try to create something through making runs or receiving them, passing the ball on, that kind of thing. So, yeah, it's just last little thing to add on that. So next is we have some questions about Junior Firpo being subbed off for Jaden Anthony and whether it was a bad decision. And I think it was mentioned earlier on in this pod that you may have thought that it was a bad decision. So we'll come to Dan first on this one.
Yeah, it was a bad call. I thought Firpo was pretty good, actually. I mean, there's a stat here about he had the most passes into the penalty area and the only player to complete a cross with 2 complete crosses or something. So I don't know how that stacks up with the Dan James stat. But I mean, just generally speaking, I felt he got the ball into dangerous areas in the penalty box. He did that thing that Firpo does do quite well. And when he kind of arrives on the left side, just towards the edge of the penalty box and plays it across the box on the ground, you know, they don't always come off, but I felt like it was coming. It was coming for him. And I just, yeah, I felt like he should have stayed on and carried on, you know, and played the whole game. I mean, I've got no problem with Anthony coming on, but not for Firpo. Anthony should have come on for Somerville or if anyone or not at all. That was my view. So, yeah, a bit harsh on Firpo bringing him off, I thought, in this game.
Yeah, Will?
Yeah, this is slightly what I'd mentioned in the Discord with you, Martin, about my hatred for right-footed left-backs. And Firpo is sort of proof of why I like left-footed left-backs. Because, yeah, as Dan said, getting around the outside, arriving, providing width in the way that I said Roberts and James managed to do well earlier, I think that's very valuable. And we missed him only the 86th minute he came off, but with the amount of injury time, that ended up being a decent chunk of play where we could have scored. I do think it was wrong to take him off, to be honest.
And I would agree with both of you. I thought Firpo had probably in this game for a while now. I know he's been pretty good the whole time he's been in the squad on this run, but he was very good. He was trying to make a lot of things happen. Like we mentioned with that start, he had 5 weighted passes into the penalty area, and the closest to that was Dan James with two, Routier on two, Camara on two, and Groove on two. Somerville didn't even complete a single pass into the penalty area in this game. So that maybe speaks to the fact that he's not been as clean in his final third actions as what he maybe has been for a long time. But that's a different story altogether. I do think that it was the wrong choice, and I would agree that we do need someone who is left-footed down that flank, and Firpo was a guy who was trying to make things happen, and you just can't overlap and put in footbacks if you're right-footed going down the left. You could, but it probably wouldn't work very well. And he was the only one who was even attempting those kind of things as well. So, yeah, I'd try something off on that one by Farker. But we'll move on. So this was the first time for a long time where Archie Gray was subbed off, and tactical reasons, in my view. What did you make to his performance, Will?
Underwhelming. After the highs of midweek and him giving Chelsea the runaround in almost hitting the big time with, or in terms of viewership anyway, that I know we watch Leeds, but nobody else really does if you're a Premier League fan necessarily. Whereas in a cup game that's on Freeview, you get a wider audience. He was brilliant there and less good today or yesterday even. I think for kind of things we've credited Roberts for, he was the opposite in terms of holding width. Didn't particularly. He was good in the move for the one that I thought Camara should have shot that went across to Somerville. He was good there, but then there wasn't much more of it in the rest of the game. And when on my rewatch, I was thinking about, I know I didn't like the subs Farker made. What would I have done? And I think at halftime, I would have bought Roberts on at right back and moved Archie into midfield alongside Groove and taken Camara off then.
No, that's totally fair. One thing I've noticed, the big differential when Roberts came on was the off-ball runs that he was making, especially ones which were attacking the half space, and the combinations which he had going with James were just very, very good. And obviously the goal came from that. It came from Roberts playing it right to James and then attacking the half space and then James playing him through. So those are the sort of things that we haven't really seen that too often from Archie. He does generally hover around that sort of area, around the half space, but the actual penetrating runs into it aren't quite there. And I think that's something which he does need to work on in the final third. And that is something which Roberts does shine in from when I did my article on him. He does those sort of runs all the time. Especially for Burnley. He did them a lot because that's a lot of what Burnley were about. They attacked the half space a lot. And that's something which I think Archie could do with added to his repertoire. But long term, he's most likely going to be a midfielder anyway. And also, that wouldn't hurt his game to have some of those off-ball runs into the half space because it's a big part of the game these days. How about you, Dan? What do you make of this?
Yeah, I mean, I was happy with Roberts and I thought he had a positive impact. But like, I thought part of that was having Dan James like high and wide and touchline hugging beyond him. So we often saw Roberts making those kind of inverted runs or runs in field and then rode on passing straight to Dan James because Roberts is pulling the Huddersfield left side defender out the way. So we would have seen, you know, if Gray had stayed on, we'd have probably still seen that and we probably would have seen some of those combinations that were quite similar. However, Roberts like came on and set up a goal. You know, it was a really nice ball for the goal, wasn't it? So I can't really complain about the sub and I thought he did have a positive impact, but I think it was more about the kind of combinations with having a proper wide option on the right rather than necessarily Archie having a bad game per se. I mean, at the time, I really agreed with it. I thought Archie was having a stinker, but again, it's one of these on the watch back. We didn't do anything wrong. It was just the combinations and the kind of dynamics of the team weren't right. And I think like the Dan James profile made that better rather than the Roberts profile, even though Roberts himself was good.
Oh, I agree with that.
That makes sense.
And yeah. there was that one particular last-ditch tackle that he made where Camara sort of made a mess of a back pass. My God. Oh, my heart was in my mouth then. Yeah, that Archie's was very good.
He's a dual monster, isn't he? Like, he got back there and he did it without fouling the guy. And he's just, Archie's a big lad. He's quick, isn't he? And he's very balanced, isn't he? And coordinated. He's obviously an elite athlete. So he moves better than most people, doesn't he? And he moves really well, doesn't he? So he's not clumsy, not charged into people, isn't he? So, yeah, that's kind of what makes him stand out, isn't it? Those kind of moments, I think.
Yeah, I think off the ball, he was very good, but like we mentioned, the profiles didn't really match up throughout the game. And I think Archie maybe will do better with a width holding winger rather than one who is inverting as much like Nonto is. I mean, don't get me wrong, they've had a couple of good combinations between them and Nonto in the games. But with Archie being a midfielder naturally, I think it works better if he's the one who's inverted. So you want someone...
I was going to say, as a combination, it might be nice if Archie was the right-sided eight in a midfield three, Nonto's the winger, and they combine that way, and then we've got a fullback that bombs on past them. That'll be a nice combo, but that's not Fark's system, is it, really? But still.
Yeah, exactly. It sounded more like a Bielsa system there. Yes. So, final question. Is there anyone else who you'd like to discuss for good or bad reasons? We'll come to Dan first.
I didn't, on the watch back, I didn't like Gross' performance this time. There was a lot of talk on the day about Kamara having a poor game, and it was one of those through watch back. It wasn't so bad. I don't know if you guys agree with that. You know, apart from the obvious error that we just discussed, where he almost played Huddersfield in. I thought, generally speaking, I thought Grove was just too cautious. He wasn't switching play enough for me. His tempo seemed off, like he was slowing the ball down at the wrong moment and then playing it too quick at the wrong moment. It just felt like a game where he kind of wasn't in the rhythm of the game and was too cautious. And I didn't like the way we built attacks. It was almost like he was on the toes of Rodon and Ampadu and not doing anything to kind of draw the opposition out and switch play and move the opposition around. It just wasn't his best. That's all, should just say that, really. I just didn't like his performance at all. Don't know what he did to make things... You know, I don't think he did anything wrong per se, but I don't think he did anything to positively impact the game in terms of build up.
No, I'd agree with that. I don't think he did have that great of a game. And I mean, if you look at some of the recent games where he's completing 80, 90, nearly 100 passes in some of the games, and in this one, it's only 67 that he completed. I know that's still a fair amount of passes, but say that we had as much possession as what we did, it doesn't seem like he got involved very much with that. You'd expect his numbers to reach over 100 in a game like this. And also, what you mentioned about him being a bit risk averse, that added up to me as well. He only attempted two long passes in the entire game, which is, I think, the least of the players besides Kamara. Only attempted one long pass, but he only attempted two. So yeah, that is something which I would like to see of more of. And in this sort of game where teams are compact, you need to try to make the most of times where you can see a ball on, and especially later on in the game when you have players like Dan James who can run and get on the end of those sort of balls, you need to be trying to hit that space more often. And yeah, this wasn't a shining example of what we know Bruce can do. But I will say he was pretty progressive in this game. He was had the second most progressive passes, so he was making some progression. It just maybe wasn't into the right sort of areas. But yeah, how about you, Will? Do you have anyone that you want to talk about?
I'd agree on Gruev being disappointing. And then when I saw this question on the running order and had that in mind whilst watching the game back, and there was people that were disappointing. I thought Rodon and Ampadu were sort of good in terms of they did what was asked of them, but on Gruev sort of not taking responsibility with line-breaking passes, I'd mentioned about the subs I thought I would have made. I was half wishing almost, is probably a better word, that we'd got Ampadu further forward. So I was wondering it's easy to say with hindsight, but against a team that was so devoid of attacking threat in the second half in the way that Huddersfield were, would it not have been fine to bring Cooper on and then you get Ampadu a bit further to take some responsibility on the ball, which we know he can do because as much as he's been playing centre-back, he's been excellent in midfield before that. And then a natural extension of that was to wish we had Pascal Strauch, which is not new for this podcast, but you know, in the second half when we had so much of the ball, he would have been great. And then also in the first half when they were being a bit man to man, we saw the centre backs having to carry the ball a bit, and Strauch is good at that. So yeah, I wish we'd had Strauch. Gruev was, you know, him and Kamara, I don't think either of them were particularly good. Besides that, I can't think of anyone else extra to comment on.
It's great. I'd agree with what you were saying there. I actually felt like he had a really strong game. He put up some ridiculous numbers when it comes to pass progression. He had 21 progressive passes in this, which is just a huge number for one individual game. And he attempted 110 passes in this game. So he was just really doing a lot of work. And obviously we were camped in their half quite often. So it's not only natural that he was putting up these sort of numbers, even from centre-back. So yeah, I would have liked to have seen him a little bit further forward, and that could have been a good play to bring on Cooper and do that a little bit further forward. But I guess we'll have to wait for Strauch to come back into the side for us to get Ampadu back into midfield. Okay, I think that's about everything for this podcast. Just a quick reminder, the website for our Patreon is patreon.com/ASAW Patreon. Well, that's all for tonight. We'll be back very soon to preview the upcoming game against Stoke City. For now, I'll say thank you to Dan.
Cheers, Martin.
And thank you to Will.
Thank you, Martin.
And thank you, dear listeners. Have a great week and enjoy the Stoke game. Bye.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.